Hi, I'm Bryson.
Hi, I'm Bryson.
And yeah, I'm from Arkansas, so I've stomped around these parts. It's really funny. When I was going to come here, everybody in L.A. asked me, wow, they have Al-Anon down there? And I'm like, man, like they make Jack Daniels there. And have you ever heard a country song? Like, good Lord, these people need Al-Anon more than we do. So I got it early. I just like to start, I always say the same thing when I start. Although I look like it, I'm not an alcoholic. And that's important to say, because Al-Anons get a little weird about that. And, outside issue and all. But man, I act like one, you know. And I'm not, you know, I was never a good drinker. I just didn't have it in me. I didn't have the allergy. But I was affected by it, you know. So before I start, yeah, my mom's here. So if any of you have ever done a fifth step with your mother, you know how I feel. So here's to that. So anyway. But that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what Alan's given me, is some freedom around stuff like that. I was born in Arkansas, and my dad was a rodeo cowboy, and my mom rodeoed with him, and I like to say that coming up, that he treated me with all the gentleness and care you would expect of a bull rider, and it's important distinction to make is that, you know, it was never physical abuse in my childhood, but some stuff happened to me. Just there was a general unsafe feeling around things. It's a big story for me from very early in my life. I'm thrilled to see men here. I'm really thrilled to see men in these rooms, because for me, men were never safe, and Al-Anon's given me a relationship with men. That guy she spoke about, Josiah, knows everything about me. I can bring that guy anything, and that's a very powerful experience for me, because I've never been shamed. Anything I bring to him is accepted, and I get love back. Every phone call ends with, I love you, man, and that's a really huge thing for me, because I grew up with really unsafe feelings from men, and the women in my life were very nurturing, my mother and grandmother. Another point of interest for me, I'm not a child of an alcoholic. I think maybe, I don't get to diagnose anybody, I think maybe some of the grandfathers, some of the people outlying in my family might have been alcoholic. At that point in Arkansas, in a town of 7,000 people, there were no alcoholics. They were drunks, but they didn't know what to call it. You know, it sure wasn't anything like Al-Anon or any idea like that. It was just, you know, like the theme of my early life was suck it up. You know, and that's, you know, it's like, you know, just, you know, put your big boy panties on and get on with it. And that's, man, that's, you know, that makes really mean people. And it made me really mean, you know, and that's something that, you know, a lot more Charles Manson than Jesus, I think, before I got to this program. So I grew up with a really tough concept of God. I grew up with a really, really tough higher power, and that was tough for me. I'll talk more about that later, about how I've come to experience God through this program. But started out any other kid, you know, nice family, and everything was rolling along. You know, I noticed a lot of, you know, even at an early age, I remember that people's drinking bothered me. And I realize now that what would happen is, when people drank, like, the guys got rougher, and things got crazier, and wild, crazy stuff would happen. You know, it's the cowboys and farmers running around, and I was sensitive. I didn't seem to be like that. And I don't know where that came from, but early on, I don't think I had to hide, you know, to hang out in those circles, and it was scary to me and felt unsafe. Got up around 5 or 6 years old, and my parents got a divorce. And it's really important to me to note that till I was like 35, my parents' divorce didn't bother me. If you'd have asked me, I was fine. It was nothing. It was no big deal. And I just, to me, I was so shut down that I don't think I ever even looked at that. But something that's interesting is that until I got really well into inventory, I couldn't remember anything from my early childhood. I still have trouble, and it's all foggy and crazy. It's a really weird thing. But I've come to find that these things that I do today and the way I live my life today, all of them tie right back to what I was living then as a child. And when I came to this program, I was acting on information that I had received when I was like 3 and 5 and 6 and 10. And whatever was set up there was playing out in my adult life, which is no way to live as an adult, reacting as a child and from a childhood place. And so that led me to a lot of unmanageability. Got on up into high school. I like to talk a lot along the way about feelings, because I associate certain feelings with certain times. For some reason, it's really strange. I was talking to my mom recently. My mom's in Al-Anon now, which is kind of amazing and cool and wonderful. And that's great. Been great to share the program with her. But we were talking, and I said, you know, I have all these deprivation issues. I'm just somebody that there's never enough, and I don't deserve to be taken care of, and all these things in my life that I try and fight against. And I say, you know, I remember having to always like borrow like lunch money and pencils from people and paper, and I just never had all that. And it was amazing. My mom was like, well, why? And I never thought about why. And I was like, well, you know, I just never had that stuff, and it just wasn't provided for me or whatever. And she was like, well, we had money. We could have just gone and buy. And I realized, just, you know, you do an inventory, you start looking at it. I never asked. I did the September, you know, back to school trip for supplies, and then you would have had to just like torture me to get me to tell you I needed a pencil or I needed paper or I needed anything. I was a needless, wantless child. I don't know where that came from, but I realized that it's like when you come up in this program, you start blaming other people all you want. I never asked. And you know what? I get to let myself off the hook, because somewhere along the line, I didn't know how to ask. And I never figured that part out. And so for me, this program's been amazing at turning that stuff around. It's hard to be mad at people when you go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And now that I think about it, I look back, I go, yeah, well, what's that about, you know? But these are key things to me as an adult. Still don't take good care of myself, you know? Still take care. But one thing I will tell you as an adult, I have a near obsession with having, like office supplies around me. So, gosh. I light up at Staples. It's awesome. But great. Now I got hoarding issues. Cool. But... there's another program for that. So anyway, I number one thing I remember from being around that age is that feeling of being unsafe, and just shrinking and staying out of the way. There was a lot of shame passed around from those men, and I realized that a lot of what I did was shrink to get out from under it. Just to not be in it. And it was as bad as if those guys had beaten me every day, you know. And it's just weird. I think about it. It's just, it was all over my town. It's really funny. You want to blame your family, but I realized it was a really unsafe environment in general, I think, at the time. But for me, when I got into high school, I used to pride myself on being able to hang out with anybody. Oh, there's, you know, I wasn't really part of any clique. I could hang out with everybody. Well, yeah, I was such a people pleaser that I knew everything that you needed me to know to fit in with you. So, yeah, I wasn't in any clique. I was accepted by them all. Well, not really, because I wasn't any one person. I was whoever I needed to be at that moment to get me into and get me that approval and that love and acceptance that I needed right then. But I'm not going to go too far into your little clique, because then these people might not like me. And that's, you know. So you spend your life kind of this weird pinball kind of around between people. And that's the way I really felt. I never felt a part of. I hear alcoholics, if you get to go to open AA meetings, go listen to Alcoholics Talk. It's amazing how similar the stories and feelings can be. For me, I always hear that, you know, that terminal, you know, uniqueness and different. And that, so me, did not feel a part of. And to this day, I struggle with that. So, you know, somehow got the idea, it boils down to, that I wasn't as good as everyone else. There was some rule book that I didn't get that everybody else had. Everybody else had all the answers, and I didn't know. And I couldn't let anybody in on that secret. I just had to fake it. So my whole life, you just come up feeling like you're faking it. And, I didn't have a favorite color. I still struggle with that. Like, what kind of food do I like to eat? Oh, my God. God forbid a girl on a date should ask me where we're going, you know? You know, I'm dating a girl in Al-Anon right now, and that's just a whole, like, that's a good half hour right there. No, what do you want? No, what do you like? Wow. Man. That is a struggle right there. So that was me. And I started, you know, having the crushes and you know, seeing girls and liking girls and man, looking back now, it was a lot of obsession going on. A lot of it wow, man, I realized that, like, he's just a kid, oh, those kids. Like, no, man, I was pretty seriously into that. And I will make a pitch. One thing I say in a lot of my pitches that, you know, we have the tent cards in Al-Anon, this, you know, keep outside issues outside. And if I got up here and talked about drinking or something the whole time or how I was, you know, a debtor or whatever, people get really bummed out. I sort of feel like love addiction is an outside issue from Al-Anon. So my pitch is about how alcoholism, other people's alcoholism affected me. And so I won't get too much into, you know, the feelings of that obsession with that one person. Because for me, what I realized is what set me up into that place was this general childhood stuff. I don't know where it came from. I don't understand it. This program says I don't have to. I just had to look at it and go, wow, this stuff really, you know, really fits. A lot of my friends talk to me about, well, how did you up in Al-Anon? Well, you know, your family's not alcoholics. You know, what do you do that? And I always tell them, it's kind of like if you were sick, and the doctor said, I don't know what you got, but let me give you this medicine. If that medicine, you know, normally cures, you know, an ear infection, and you get better, well, maybe you had an ear infection. And that's all I know. So for me, the 12 steps work that way. I don't know, but I was a wreck when I came in here, and I feel a lot better now. So I'll let everybody else in the family diagnose, you know, their disease and all. And look here, mom shows up proving me right. That's pretty awesome. Kick ass. So you know, there I am, a teenager, and I like girls a lot, you know, a lot. Because that's, you know, it's that approval. You know, there's that something outside of myself to make me feel okay. That's an instant ticket to acceptance. You know, oh, look at the girl. Look at the girl I got. Oh, here we go. I often say, I don't know if I got into my chosen profession because I really like it or just I like being around chaotic people. I don't know. But I got to say that I really love people with a lot of chaos going on. And I realize now that the whole thing behind that is deflection. Okay, they're not looking at me. We're focused on somebody else here. I don't have to look at me. And also, it's like a really horrible, and it's so just hard to admit, it's so shameful that it's self-righteousness. If I'm with somebody that is just like dragging in the dirt, well, I look pretty good. You know, I don't have to work too hard. You know, like if this person, you know, if I'm, you know, dragging my girlfriend in stumbling drunk, it's like, oh, Bryson, what a great guy. Oh, look at him. He's so, oh, you know, and that's, I lived on that because it was nothing inside me. Nothing really there. So I needed all this outside stuff. I needed people to have some reason to think that I was a good guy. You know, God forbid I should just be a good guy, right? Like what a foreign concept that is. You know, so I get into relationships. Looking back, man, it's like I just, you know, it's unbelievable to me looking back at the pattern, how early the pattern was set up, and how just repetitive it was. It's like I bored myself. By the time I was done with my fourth step, I was like, again? I'm over it. I don't, again? Really? Yeah, again. Over and over and over the same thing throughout my life. My relationships were the same way. chaotic, crazy girl, you know, me fixing and managing and working it out. It all falls apart, me feeling horrible. Oh, you're someone new, yay. And that was it. That was it. Like, I could not see the pattern, you know. Whereas if I could have gotten back from it, like the steps help you do, you go, wow, whoa, look at that. That looks kind of crazy when I look at it, you know, from a little ways away. And that's what it was. So broken. I moved out to California, and that was terrifying. And I share this because a guy shared in a meeting one time. I was in a meeting in L.A., and a guy said that he used to have panic attacks, that there wasn't enough air in the room. And that's a weird thing, but he would have this terrified fear and have to leave the room. And the reason I share that is I had a lot of anxiety around driving, to the point where I'd have panic attacks driving. And some of you may think that in L.A. that's not unusual, but for me it was excessive, above the usual L.A. traffic stress, to the point where, and here's some like irrationality for you, I got rid of my car and drove motorcycles for 8 years. Like, that was safer. Like, but to me, I felt more in control. Oh, control. Wow. At an Elon meeting, I'm talking about control. Weird. And I felt, I don't know why, that worked for me. And so all of a sudden, you go start looking around the second step. You're like, wow, there's some insanity. What are you doing, you know? But for me, I realized that in my early 20s, that stuff was going on for me. And that anxiety and that fear, it's part of this disease. I just didn't know. I didn't have anybody around. And apparently it wasn't my time to know. I had to stumble around for a few more years. But I remember that. And I see that as a symptom of what alcoholism did to me. You know, what other people's alcoholism put, you know, into me, how I took that on. I ran through a lot of friends. I ran through a lot of girlfriends. My life at varying times worked really well, never got above a certain level. But what I found was is that at a certain point, I had, you know, my dream job and everything was great, and that went away. And when that went away, I didn't really have anything. It's interesting that when everything for you is outside other esteem, as they call it, you know, you don't have any self-esteem, everything's other esteem. When everything goes away, you're nothing, and you're just empty and lost. And I just shut down. And it's weird, at that point in my life, I realized I started to build back up by focusing on making money. And I was able to ride on that for a while. I'm making money. Okay, I'm successful this way. Okay, that's cool. And, you know, along with that was, okay, and this girl. Okay, and I got the money, and I got this girl, and okay. But I still empty inside, empty inside. And it kept working along. And that culminated in adding in the third factor for outside esteem for me at that point, which was my association with the arts. I got involved with an artist. I like to say she was a dancer. That was her part of the arts. And she wasn't just any kind of regular old dancer. She was an exotic dancer. So, yeah. So there you go. Special. Once again, I am unique. So anyway, and I just, man, I, you know, at that, it's unbelievable. It just, when I think about it now and I look back on it, it's just how the wheels spun off my life. The thing that's really embarrassing about not being an alcoholic is that I managed to really destroy my life and the lives of others without drugs or alcohol. Like, I was dead sober doing it. I was thinking about it. I was planning and plotting it. It was unbelievable to me. And it's not even a cool story. It's like, people are like, hey, man, how long are you sober? I'm like, I'm not sober. I'm an Al-Anon. And it's so funny that it's just like, oh, it's not near as cool. Oh, he's an Al-Anon. Oh, whatever. It's really funny. It's embarrassing, you know? You're like, wow, man. Like, I'm responsible. You know, it was me. I was there. I can't, oh, man, I was so messed. No, I wasn't messed up. I was, but just not, you know. Not any substance that, you know, you could, you know, tax. But a friend of mine in L.A., I love it so much, he talks about being addicted to fear. And he says, well, you know, because it's cheap to manufacture and I can have an unlimited supply. And it's awesome. Mark, he's like, oh, such a great thing. But, so here I was, you know, getting really wrecked, fixing this other person's life. All the stuff. You read the literature and it's just like, yeah, I did that. Yeah, listening for the sound of opening, you know, oh yeah, okay, that, you know, and all of it, man, just paying the rent, you know, and not even being asked. Al-Anons, we just show up for stuff. We just do stuff. Let me do this. My sponsor says, wait for the question. I'm like, wow. Wait for the question. That could have saved me thousands of dollars and countless hours of time. Wait for the question. Wow, what a concept. So here was this girl, and you know, I had the perfect out. She wasn't an alcoholic. People were like, I think she may be an alcoholic or drug addict. No, she hardly ever drinks. She doesn't. And I had no knowledge of alcoholism. In the literature, it's so important. It says, you know, learn the facts about alcoholism. Because the gig is that, you know, it's just so cliche, but it's like, you know, not all alcoholics are bums or skid row types. Yeah, this girl was none of that, you know. She didn't smell like liquor, and she wasn't living on the street. It was all, you know, kind of, you know, keeping it together in a fashion. So I could, you know, keep that denial going, you know. Oh, she's not an alcoholic, so therefore I don't need to go to Al-Anon. Let's not crack that can of worms right there. And it all just sort of rolled along. And basically, the last day, man, I always see you say, a vision for you. I woke up The girl that got me into Al-Anon was my assistant at the time, and she comes in, and I'm sitting in my office, which is in my house, and I'm at my computer in fuzzy slippers, boxer shorts, and a wife beater, and I'm just sitting at the chair crying my eyes out, bawling, and she shows up, and she just, like, gets a piece of paper, and she's like, go here. She gave me the address of an Al-Anon meeting tonight, and find Beverly, and tell her you're my friend, and I, you know, I guess I just was so broken down, I went. You know, I just, it's like, there's no, I don't know. Because I am arrogant, and I am, just, you know, self-righteous and self-important, and I don't need help from anybody. Here I am, needless and wantless. I'm not going to go to a room and talk to a lot of people and have them, you know, they might try to help me or something or be nice to me. God forbid. Lord knows I don't deserve that. And, but I went. And man, it was like Grandma Al-Anon meeting of L.A. It was awesome. It was like, nobody was knitting. It's not the cliche like that. Nobody was knitting, but it was right up in there, man. And I rolled in. Oh, I can't imagine what they must have thought. The good news is, the good news was I was just so pitiful, you know. It was like, great. Nobody was going to be mean to me because, one, it's Al-Anon, and two, it was pitiful. And I showed up, but, man, I really loved it. And these people who appeared to have nothing in common with me were telling the same story, and they were talking about the same feelings. And that's a big deal for me. The facts of my childhood... Facts of my childhood are irrelevant and in many cases wrong. I got it wrong. Just like the school supplies, I was wrong. But my feelings around that were huge. And that's what in these programs I get, the feelings, you know, age, you know, whatever, gender, race, all of it melts away when you talk about the feeling. Yeah, me too. I felt that way. Feel like you're not enough? Yeah, me too. You know, and that was a big thing for me. So I'm sitting in this room. And I'll give you a case study in how not to get Al-Anon recovery. I went to one meeting a week. I might read some literature. I wasn't going to call anybody. Was not going to get a sponsor because, well, there you go. And I 13th stepped somebody in the meeting. Awesome. That last part, surefire. So, after about 6 months, I was cured. It was all good. You people were great and fine, and that's cool. But I sort of drifted out. And that girl was gone. You guys had patched me up. I'm limping out of the Al-Anon world. Thanks. I'm back to the way I'm good. And I went along like that for about another year. You know, if you want to look at unmanageability, You know, yeah, that girl was gone. Okay, great. Well, you know, when the alcoholic leaves, you're just left with yourself. Like, there's nothing. I swear to God, it's horrible to break up. It's horrible to have a relationship end. But it's amazing because you're just left with yourself. And you get to see. You guys, I say it all the time. You guys are looking at my problem here tonight. I am my problem. There's nobody in this world that's responsible for my trouble. You know, I'm no longer a victim. I'm a full-grown man. You know, and everything I've ever done is a choice. I chose those women. I chose those situations. I choose the jobs. I choose all of that. My life, my higher power gives me a choice. And I can look for the flow or I can ignore it. You know, usually the ignoring it's painful and that's, you know, that happens a lot. But so back to ignoring it. About a year, I'm not in program there. And you know, I tell this the same way every time. I went out to the desert in L.A. with my gay sober friend, and I came back, and she was not acting gay, she was no longer sober, and she was not my friend. And that's all I'll say. At that point, it was an excellent Al-Anon weekend. I brought her a shot of tequila. I don't even drink. I drink like once a year or something. I bought her a shot of tequila, and we broke 8 years of sobriety for her together. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. Still, right? And then, you know that part where they talk about, you know, like when you pick back up, it comes right back just like it was? Yeah. Like you think the disease isn't doing push-ups? Yeah. And what's even sadder about it is I spun further out of control than she did. And that's the gig. I went crazy because it's just that was my drug. It's my drug of choice, that other person. There it was. All of a sudden, in the midst of, you know, taking responsibility for myself and all this, no. There's her to focus on now. That my life can wait. You know, that's it. And I don't know if they say it here, but we hear it all the time in California. When Al-Anon dies, someone else's life flashes before their eyes. That's so my story. You know, if I can live for you, please just let me. Because I'm not worthy of a life. And my life's not exciting. But there, the fabulous alcoholic, whoa, that's fun. You know, that's action and excitement. The cops may be involved in that life, you know. I'm too much of a people pleaser to, like, you know, wreck a bar or something. You know, whoa, someone might not like me. The police won't like me. I mean, I'm very easily manageable from the outside in that way. But so, you know, thank God this person had some 12-step, you know, because they got to see that I was just lost, you know. And here I was, this empty, hollow shell built up on the outside, you know, with money that had started to fall apart, and built up with love that wasn't really love and was really falling apart, and built up with everything in the world, nothing inside me, just emptied out. And she said, you know, you got to go fill that. You got to fill that up, and you got to fill that up with God. And so I thought about it for a couple days, and what had made me feel God was those meetings. And I went back to Al-Anon. And this time, I went to a few more meetings, and I read some books, and I met some people, and I ended up meeting my sponsor. I got an awesome sponsor the first time. He was like this NA guy who was also an Al-Anon, and he was just like, you know, whatever, bro, and it was awesome. It was great. He's a great guy, but like, he was like the very low direction, low maintenance sponsor. Like, I never called him, and then finally, after about 3 weeks, I was like, you know what, I'm never going to call that guy. I went to a meeting, I heard Josiah speak, and I'd never seen him, I was just like, that guy. I called him up and spilled my tale of woe, and we got started, you know, working this program, and it's been a beautiful, beautiful thing. I want to talk about those feelings, because all that stuff that got me here and part of that story and all, well, yeah, that, you know, it's important, but it's not happening anymore. And that's key for me to remember, because I react like it's still happening. You know, I react like a little kid. I react like I'm you know, like I'm in that place. I'm no longer a victim. You know, my life is pretty good these days. life, reality, the now, this moment, is always pretty good. I mean, you know, we live in America, man. It's pretty good here. You know, is it? Seldom. I'm not making any pitch on either way on that, but I'm just saying, like, day to day, I don't have to look for food. You know, my life is good. Hey, a guy named Shelly out in L.A., and I don't know, I think he may be an alcoholic, I don't know, but he said in a pitch one night, just killed me. He said, the moment is eternal. This moment right here, and this moment, and it's still good. We're all still here. I love every one of you. You guys, I assume because you're here, you love me. I assume that we have that bond going. I don't have any expectation of love, but I'll just say, in Al-Anon, I have found that to be my experience. This is a good place, you know? And I find that every day, if I can go, well, it's still good here. Okay, cool. Still good here, you know? And that's how I've had to live my life, but it's a beautiful thing. Because, you know, on my cell phone, it says now is not then. And if I can remember that, it's a big deal. Now is not then. Now is not then. I'm no longer that little kid. There's nobody doing this. I have good friends. I have a sponsor. I have wonderful people in my life. I have safe people in my life. I don't get shamed on a daily basis. So, you know, when that guy at the counter at the deli or whatever, you know, throws some shame my way, whoa, that's not mine. You know, that's not mine. I don't know how this program works. I don't understand the inner workings of it. But it's important to say that it's a 12-step program. In Al-Anon, I'm always wondering about that because it's like a lot of time I go to meetings, I don't hear much about the steps in Al-Anon. It's a big deal. It's a 12, it just says it. Everything we read says it's a 12-step program. It all says it. It's not, you know, it's not self-help because, you know, I was self-helping myself for years, and let me tell you, that did not look pretty. That was pretty ugly. It was pretty bad. I left him my devices. Yeah, I we always say, you know, it's like my best thinking got me to a church basement on a Friday night. But when I look at those steps, for me, you know, I get I'm pretty blessed because none of my sponsees have any problems. It's pretty awesome. When I get sponsees, they're fine. They're like me. I'm fine. So powerlessness, well, I don't know. Unmanageability, maybe. Okay. Well, how's finances? Woo, I'm okay. That's unmanageable. I'll put that down. I can't manage. How's your relationship? Unmanageable job. Not managing that so well. All of a sudden, I got this list of unmanageability. Wow. Well, what caused that unmanageability? Oh, a bunch of stuff I can't change and I can't control. Oh, I got some powerlessness there. Oh, okay, well, hey, man, sounds like you're doing a first step. Sounds like you're kind of getting into that idea that, you know, you got that going on. Well, do you have anything? You know, it's like, it's the greatest out-on statement ever in life. It's not even, it has nothing to do with conference approved. It's how's that working out for you? It's like, I've got it, man. I'm okay. I'm where I'm doing that. Hey, how's that working out for you? Cool. Check in with me in a month. Cool. That's a no, man. She's different. Cool. How's that working out for you? All right. So for me, you know, I was like, well, okay. But I had a really broken God. I had a really broken higher power. I had a higher power. I grew up with a Southern higher power, which means that God couldn't know what I was doing Saturday night. Like God had a cutoff. 3-4 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, God came back on and carried me on through, you know, whatever. But God, there was stuff that God, no, didn't happen. And I had to come to accept that God loved me no matter what. No matter what. Like I did all, if I believe that God loves me, if I really believe that I have a higher power that loves me, wow, what an amazing, forgiving thing that must be, because I've done some horrible stuff. Here I am with this stack of horrible stuff, and yet I'm still here, still doing it. And by the way, when I follow the flow of what feels right to God, stuff really works. So clearly still loves me. I like to say I have a PlayStation God. My higher power is like, you know, like leading me through a maze, and then I'm off. Oh, reset. I got to go back and play that level again. And that's it. You know, my higher power doesn't get mad at me when I do stupid stuff. You know? It's just, oh, dude, okay. My God, by the way, my God says dude a lot. But anyway, dude, not again, dude. But it's not a bad thing. It's just like, yeah, I know, yeah, okay. So all of a sudden, oh, okay, yeah, okay, wait a minute, okay. I can't do this. There's something bigger than me. Okay, I got this God thing. Okay, well, the next big deal, you got to make a decision. You don't have to turn your will and your life over. You don't have to do it. Just made a decision. They trick you into the steps. The steps are like, it's like this. Don't sit next to me. Okay, no, I'm not sitting next to you. Don't sit next to me. Okay, I'm not sitting next to you. It's like scooting along. Before you know, you're on like the sixth step. Like, what happened? And that's the giving. It's like, no. Just make a decision to turn your will and your life over. And that one's, you know, that's hard to do, but easy to think through. Because if you come in with a low bottom, like me, when just nothing's working, and like, you know, people are calling you on the phone trying to take your stuff, and, you know, just craziness going on in your life, all of a sudden you're like, yeah, you can have all this. You know, you can have this. But it's hard to do daily. It's hard to do daily. But it's interesting, because some stuff is way easier if you're in the third step. Talking to you would be impossible for me. If my ego was in it, if I was here about me, I can't face all y'all. I can't do that. And so the gig is that if I can show up and be of service to the moment and just show up. I didn't show up with any like big spiel. I said, how long do I pitch? I found out this evening. Like, how long do I talk? Tell me when to stop. And that's it. Because it's just God. It's not me. And that allows me to just be of service and come here and share my experience, strength, and hope and not get caught up in the ego thing. So it's weird because you're like, well, I got to let go of all that. But yeah, there's a lot of bad that goes with that. There's a lot of horrible, you know, stuff that goes with it. And so you let go of that and you're like, okay. So, yeah, you know, I can't do it. God can do it. Okay, I'll let him. It's the old cliche. Hate the slogans, by the way. Hate them. I always say that. Hate the slogans. They work. They're great. They're wonderful. Use them. But, oh, I just hate when people quote them to me by rote. It's like, oh. My sponsor and I have a couple of my sponsors. The two unofficial Al-Anon slogans is mind your own damn business and shut your effing mouth. Those are Al-Anon slogans out there. Keeps me out of trouble. I could pretty much get rid of the other ones and just do those two and probably get through life with a strong higher power. Because I'm all in your stuff. And, inventory. They always say it, dirty secret of the fourth step. If any of you haven't worked it, the dirty secret is you're fine. I don't want to blow the movie for you, but the ending is you're fine.